Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm excited to have Vlad Ek, and I'm so sorry if I mispronounced that, but you'll go ahead and introduce yourself and of Invotech. Really happy to have you on the show today. And yeah, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, Dean. Hi, everybody. My name is Vlad from Invotech. We're a technology company focused on, very vertically focused on automotive and power sports lending. Typical SaaS provider, and there's a lot that goes with that vertical, and I'm sure we'll dig into it as we go through the interview.
Yeah, it's interesting because like you built like kind of this leading digital lending platform, as you said, serving banks, credit unions, and finance companies. But what problem were you originally trying to solve, and why did you believe data and automation were the answer?
It's a great question. Look, my background and my co-founder and my spouse, Daniela, our background is in manufacturing. We both used to work at Kodak Health Imaging. And in that world, you're manufacturing at very high quantity medical imaging devices, which are obviously controlled and under FDA regulation. So as you can imagine, being able to produce at super high quality, knowing all the ingredients and all the conditions that went into making a specific sheet of X-ray film is critical, because somebody goes to a doctor, they do an X-ray, and there's a shadow. Is it a defect or is there something wrong? So you can imagine the level of scrutiny coming from that. And the place we worked was the only place in the world that makes the X-ray film. It's Kodak and Fuji. So it's really one of two plants in the world. So the demand is unbelievable. It's a 365, 24/7, never stops, like an unbelievably detailed and automated process. And when we moved to Canada in 2006, we were looking for some consulting work initially. And one of our very first clients was a company that was doing automotive leasing. And what became very obvious to us within the first month is that they are in the business of manufacturing. They just don't understand that they are in the business of manufacturing. Their raw materials are different. It's a credit bureaus and various other information you collect, the credit application. But if you, and at that time, they were doing it more like an art than a science. They have a credit analyst and they know based on historical experiences and whatever they know about the business, who to approve, who to decline. But it became obvious to us that if you approach this as manufacturing and you treated all these inputs you have as raw data, had good data management practices in place, good data analysis layers, you could actually automate a lot of the lending. It's a long explanation, but that's the background.
Yeah, you know, so that's really interesting. So like when you look at the high performing financial institutions, like what distinguishes the ones that like truly operate with the data versus just reporting on it?
Look, those were the days back 20 years ago. I'd say that largely that kind of mode of operating is not present anymore. Pretty much everybody now is a good data operator. Certainly, in order to stay in business and to be competitive, you have to be. So that was just the early days when we saw the opportunity. And systems like ours and others make it possible for financial companies to properly ingest data, properly store it, properly analyze it, and truly be a data company, like you said. So they're not just reporting on data, they're actually leveraging the data to make their decisions.
Yeah, great. And so how are you guys leveraging AI to deliver value to your clients?
It's a long question with a lot of facets to it, but I think to begin with, maybe first thing I would say is that if you think about lending specifically, one of the traditional problems in lending has been that you have two different data sets. You have the data you get digitally from various partners and providers. Like for example, if I pull a credit bureau, I get very well-structured XML or JSON data that I can parse and leverage and use. But let's say that you're asking maybe a dealership who you're working with to send you a proof of income. or to send you a proof of employment or proof of ID. You might get a picture or a scan of a document that was generated by some other system, right? So now how do you, so you have a, this really interesting duality of data. Like you have very good, highly structured quality data, and you have this data that comes to you in form of images and PDFs and scans and pictures. Like the funniest one I've ever seen personally was a proof of down payment, which was a picture of 10 $100 bills. So you have to be able to process both. And this is really where AI comes in a large extent to a part of the, maybe I shouldn't say that's not the only use case, but one of the use case for AI usage is that AI is very good these days at working with unstructured data and making sense of it.
Yeah, yeah, I've never heard of that. That's pretty funny. Proof of down payment, showing the cash. So how about like at your organization, as CEO, how do you personally use data to align your team's priorities and execution across your organization?
For sure. Look, it would be very, I think, unreasonable of us to tell our customers, hey, you guys need to take care of your data. You need to run your businesses using proper workflows and information you have, and then for us not to do the same really wouldn't make sense. It luckily our business in many ways I think is simpler than theirs, so it's not as complex from that perspective. Our biggest, if you think about the data that we generate and need to manage, it's really around the product and ingestion of requests and asks and questions and comments. We use systems that where we can log and track projects and execution. And then we use various AI agents on top of it to help us summarize, identify things that are not moving or are forgotten, haven't been touched. There's a whole bunch of steps in there to essentially measure the quality of the output and the velocity of the throughput. And I think once you have the velocity under control and things are not stuck and not moving, and you have good quality outputs and you don't have a ton of rework, then generally speaking, at least in our business, we do a good job from a customer perspective. At least in a day-to-day engagement, like forget about quality of the product and all, that's a different story.
Yeah, and what metrics do you review weekly versus monthly?
There's a whole set of metrics, starting with some of the financial metrics, looking at our costs, obviously, how much are we spending on various leisure or other services, looking at sort of the pipelines on the sales in terms of the, we measure it as an expected value, which is essentially looking at the ARR of the upcoming opportunities relative to where they are in the pipeline. So it produces like a realistic estimated value of the pipeline. Then looking at from a security perspective, if there was any incidents or events that needed to be reviewed. And there's various levels of thresholds of kind of how we measure those. Then looking at from a support perspective, how many escalated tickets there are, if there's anybody that's unhappy, looking at, like I said, financials and budgets in terms of receivables and outstandings, if there's any problems there. And then from a project execution perspective as well, looking at, like I said, the velocity of items that are getting completed and done and what the rework percentage is. And then obviously we look at utilization of resources, just wanting to make sure that people, because one concept that we have, and I have to maybe explain this a bit, is that we've designed our workflows internally so that everybody, everything we do should be a project. It could be a client-driven project, it could be an internal project, but as a part of the team, you shouldn't have to work on something that's not a defined project. So we measure that as a project work utilization time. And the goal is that essentially 100% of the time people are working on projects. And if they're not, the question is why not? And what is it that they're doing? Should it be a project? And so it helps us identify these little shadow things that always creep up and happen.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't heard of that before. And then, so that leads to my next question, but like, how do you align your teams on outcomes versus just like activity?
I'm really glad you said that, because that has always been one of our core messages, is that we need to be focused on outcome, not on the activity. And I think our core values really align with that very much. When you look at even when we bring in new team members and we hire people, one of the key things that we always talk about and focus on is our core values, which are basically act like an owner, which very much naturally emphasizes that focus on the outcome, making sound decisions, which again, very much self-explanatory. Putting we before me, this one is a little bit more, maybe needs a bit of an explanation, in a sense that, you know, my team is always more important than me. My group is more important than my team. The company is more important than the group. And ultimately, the customer is more important than the company. So if you think from that kind of hierarchical perspective and then apply act like an owner and make sound decisions, you'll be able to intuitively make the right choice when you're faced with a dilemma or a complicated problem or not sure what to do. Obviously, you can always escalate to somebody, but just trying to make people more empowered and be self-sufficient. And then finally, and this one really touches on AI a lot, is get better every day. I think in an industry that we're in, if you're not getting better every day, then falling behind.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you whittle it down to a few. I read it on your website, what you just talked about. And some people have just too many values and trying to do too many things. I like that you really honed it in those that set.
Thank you. And you know what? And it's not something that we've sat down and said, oh, let's make up some core values. Like we started the business in 2006. These core values emerged on their own in about 2018 or something. So it took 12 years for this to crystallize and come to become real in a way that we can write it down. But that's why it feels genuine and accurate. It's not forced. We didn't just make it up.
Yeah, it's your real culture. It's one thing just to make it up and then try and live it. It's another thing to have lived it and then write it down. That's a pretty big distinction. Oh yeah, good
Exactly.
job. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah. So how about a lot of organizations collect a lot of data but still move slowly? And what have you learned about increasing decision velocity without sacrificing quality or governance?
Well, I don't know. That's a tough one, to be honest with you. I think it depends on the industry and depends on the sensitivity of what you're dealing with, how much you should push that envelope. I can speak certainly to our industry and what we know. And generally speaking, our industry is and has been slow to move, and that's for a good reason. There's a lot of oversight and a lot of regulation and lending and financial services. And that's obviously there to protect the consumer, like I said, for a good reason. So I don't think that in our industry, you typically see these rapid, quick adoptions of whatever it is, new technology. And what that really means is that it's up to us as providers in that sector to be the ones that are creating a layer of trust and accountability between the business and the new tool. Specifically, let's talk today about AI, right? So AI today is probably a bit too much of a black box just to let the, say, bank's lending team jump into using AI directly without understanding what they're getting back. Like it's really our job to manage that layer of interaction with AI to provide explainable, predictable, verified outcomes and enable the business to scale by use of AI specifically, right?
Yeah, you're in a regulated, very highly regulated industry, and so it's pretty hard. And how do you safeguard the data in an AI environment?
Look, this goes even before AI. Compliance and data security is something that's not an afterthought and cannot be in our industry, for at least for the providers that have a goal of providing these services to truly large enterprises and national banks and such. And so we already have ISO 27001 and ISO 27018 certifications, and they basically cover information security management, protection of personal data in the cloud, things like that. And so when you start with that, and there's a new one that's coming out, it's already out, but we're just in the process of getting certified, is ISO 42001, which is the first international standard specifically designed for AI management systems. So it gives us a very structured governance framework for data management, transparency, accountability throughout the whole life cycle. And in practical terms, what that means is that we're not just asking our clients, oh, trust us, we know what we're doing. We're actually getting audited by, we use the same auditor that Microsoft uses because we want to hold ourselves to the highest possible standard. And I think that gives our clients a lot of comfort and understanding. And because it is all very, like, there's a bunch of systems in place that are tracking all these things. It's not just like there's audits, there's data can be provided, there is certifications. And so I think you have to do that. In our industry, there's no way around it.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And what advice would you give other business leaders trying to integrate AI into their operations?
Look, we're like the, maybe I'll start by saying that AI has been around for a long time in our industry. We've been using AI in the form of machine learning and various regression models going all the way back to those early days. But if you think of that kind of AI, obviously that's very well understood and very well known. But the new AI, the LLMs and such, we're still in the early stages ourselves, so I really wouldn't position myself as like somebody with all the answers. And in many ways, I think that's the point, because I really believe with how quickly this technology is advancing and how quickly things are changing, I don't think that there is somebody who can claim to have it all figured out. And if they do, they're probably overstating things, because 6 months from now, it'll all be very different. My advice, if I can give any, would be not to think of AI adoption as hiring an AI transformation leader, but actually this is something that you can't delegate to a single team or a single person. It's about everybody in the company becoming an AI operator. And that means that you have to start working at it from the grassroots, from the bottom up, and figure out different use cases in different teams and how AI applies to them. So it becomes part of the culture, not like this specialized knowledge or a specialized team. That's just how you do work. Just you're not really thinking how to write code today.
Yeah, that's good advice. So where is AI actually making teams better and helping them execute faster? And then where is it still like mostly noise? There's so much hype out there.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of hype, but it's changing very quickly. And honestly, even in the last month and a half, it's changed a lot. And what we're starting to see is with the new command line integrations and command line interfaces with the AI, especially with Claude, we're just seeing this increased level of ability to operate on your behalf. So it's not just answering questions, it's actually able to do things that are very practical and effective. And like I said, we're still in the early stages. We run everything in Microsoft Azure, and they've now launched their own command line to Copilot. Our goal is specifically to look at how we can enable that for all of our team members. But that's more looking forward. Looking back, and to answer your question more practically, where we've seen a big help is even with the tools as they are, even without going to full-on AI-generated code, we've seen about a 30% lift from our dev team just in terms of leveraging AI for recommendations, small augmentations, code reviews, unit tests, just helping, not giving it over to AI, but just augmenting your work a little bit with AI. Even that was about 25, 30% lift in productivity. And then on, obviously, where it's helped tremendously is interaction with customers, where all of the meetings that are recorded, it can produce fantastic notes, take detailed points, help us not forget things, not lose things, not ask the same questions again, and then obviously summarize all that data, be able to search through it and structure it properly so that we're just being more efficient. So I'd say for us, it's pretty real. I don't think it's not hype, it's very real.
Yeah. And do you have trust issues like with your teams or customers? Yeah. Well, yeah. How do you deal with that?
Not really, because we opted to do it within Microsoft environment. So Microsoft gives us essentially, think of this as an AI bubble. Like it's all contained within our domain. There's no data or information leaking outside of it. From that perspective, there's a high degree of trust. We already trusted with all of the rest of the data, so it's no different. And that's one thing that I think Microsoft did a really good job in a sense that it made our adoption a lot easier. So it does limit us to the models that Microsoft does support in some ways, but all the models are competitive. They push each other forward. So maybe you don't have the latest and greatest, but it's good enough.
Yeah. One week OpenAI is better than Anthropic, and then yeah, just going back and forth. And so how about your customers? How are they seeing ROI through the AI work that you guys have done in your platform?
Some of it, like I said, has been in there for a long time. So I'm going to skip right through that one. That ROI has been in place for 10, 15 years. The new things where we're seeing benefits and ROI is in that unstructured data processing. And that's still very much work in progress because, like I said, even in the last 3 months, like it feels like everything is completely revamped and reached a whole nother level of efficiency. But fundamentally, what we do is we leverage AI to look at these unstructured documents to try and extract information from them and then look at that data in the context of the overall data set that's well structured and known and look for discrepancies, differences, verify that it makes sense. For example, I'll give you an example. Let's say I'm buying a car and it has a specific VIN number, obviously. And then I receive this warranty document that describes the warranty that I've purchased. Okay, I can verify. Does the VIN number match? Is it the same make and model? Do the dollar amounts make sense? Is it the same customer name that's on the warranty? This is the work that traditionally would have to be done by humans. We're staring and comparing, which is really bad for two reasons. One is that it's a very labor intensive and it's not really the most interesting work. And B, it's hard to say. You know that somebody looked at it and said that it's fine, but is it really fine? Like, how do you know that they didn't make a mistake or they didn't overlook something? There's really no actual data generated as a result of that process, unless you make them retype what's on a document, but now you're increasing inefficiency to the nth level. What we're seeing now is with AI is very good at looking at that document, extracting the data, turning it into actual data, doing the comparison, identifying a potential discrepancy, and then simply asking a human if it does think that something's wrong, hey, is this really wrong or not? And then a human can make a final decision. The ROI on that is measured in different ways. In some way, this type of approach is infinitely scalable. It doesn't matter if you receive one document or 10,000 documents, it'll process them virtually in the same amount of time. And on the other side, you now have an audit trail of the work you've done. There's actual data being generated. So it reduces your need for QA because a lot of our customers would do, they would do the stare and compare, trust that the person's done it, but then QA it after the fact with another team and sample to make sure that it's good. Now you don't have to do that. Like you've completely eliminated that whole QA process and you've created maybe, you know, nothing's faster than stare and compare. So it's interesting because it's hard to say that it's quicker, but it's properly audited, properly structured, and more verifiable, if you will, and more scalable in a sense that if you see a spike in volume, your return times are not going to spike. Like your turnaround time is going to stay flat and consistent, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean that's a great use case, and it's got to be so productive. Probably gave so much time back to your customers, assured that the quality's there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, there is still, we're still in the early days. There is still maybe, and part of it also, I think, is managing expectations, honestly, because it all depends what you're expecting from it. Because if you have a document that's just not legible and not readable, and the letters are all cut off or skewed, AI can't make it up. It can't make up information that's not on paper. Sometimes you run into those kind of questions of, oh, AI didn't do a good job. But then you look at the document, you're like, nobody can do a good job with this. So it's kind of fine-tuning those and eliminating edge cases that are truly not solvable, and then managing the expectation that this is not a magic wand. It's not like this all of a sudden eliminates the need for human work. No, it allows you to scale and get the humans to do the things that are more interesting and more important.
And then Vlad, how do you see AI transforming your industry in the next few years?
Like I mentioned, our industry is fairly slow to move, so I think it's really also to move and relies on vendors like ours and others to create that layer of transparency and trust. And if you zoom out a little bit, I really think that beyond automating the workflows, I really think that AI, the modern AI, has a capability and capacity to potentially change the entire car buying experience. I'm sure you've seen it, Dean, others. There's now just a plethora of personal agents and assistants and such, who are very easier than ever to build and customize and launch. So we're not on that side of the business. We're focused more on the kind of lender side. But imagine if that whole buying experience is now driven by an AI agent you're talking to, and it's guiding you through the buying process, helping you figure out what car to buy. And it's capable of browsing the web, scanning through inventories, finding exactly what you want, and letting you know, okay, here's a car that fits exactly what you want. This is what you should buy. All of these things become possible. So I think it's up to us on the other side of it to make sure that we can connect and talk to these new modes of engagement, so that if you do have an AI shopper, that we can provide financing to an AI shopper. If
Be part of the whole workflow of
part of the workflow.
once you find something you like, make it easy to pay for it.
Exactly. But that means now that rather than just necessarily providing a calculator or a quote to through a website or to a dealer, you now need to be able to respond to an agent request. So that's interesting and cool in many ways.
And get a good rate and not have
Yeah.
to like first search for where to get the money, what's the good rate, how do I do it? Yeah, it'll save a lot of time. And then,
Totally.
was there a question I didn't ask that you wish I would have asked?
No, I think we've touched on all of the relevant things. Take a quick look through some of my notes. Yeah, I think we've touched on it all pretty much.
Okay, good. And if people wanted to learn more about your solutions or get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Probably best to through our website, innovatech.com, and or through LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. It's easy to get in touch these days.
And then your LinkedIn profile is.
Just my first and last, so V Kovacevic, and I can maybe provide it to you after. You can add it to the
Sure.
feed.
All right, great. Appreciate you sharing your what you guys have built and your point of view and with AI. And thank you, Vlad.
No, thank you for the time. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.